Blog Talk Radio.
It's a really big shoe tonight. A really big shoe tonight.
Welcome back to Ion Leap Radio. I'm Steve St. Clair, and this month we're talking about big content marketing, otherwise known as content events. A big part of what of content marketing is video. And over the past several years, I've had the wonderful pleasure to meet and work closely with some storytelling experts, the owners of Committee Films of Minneapolis, Andy and Maria Oz. Welcome, guys. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. So you guys, among other things, and you've created a ton of commercials over the years, but you've gotten into bigger stories. And you created, wrote, and produced one of the biggest and most successful content events on History Channel's H2 channel. It's called America Unearthed. Tell us about that. First, yeah, just briefly touch on that. We're going to get into it again later, but I just want to hear, how did that come about? How did you invent that story?
Yeah, well, I never think of us as inventing stories, but really just capitalizing on stories that are out there really waiting to be told. I think it's a matter of, bringing attention to things that we know would interest people. I mean, being able to identify kind of unknown areas that haven't been explored, I think tapping into those kinds of things is very, very important. So with America Unearthed, we're really looking for history that hasn't been told, particularly as it pertains to artifacts and things like that have been found in the United States. What's the story behind those? Who are the people behind those things? What are different theories that we can put forth that cause people to ask questions about the origins of America, about their own histories, all of that? Andy, I don't know if you want to add anything there.
No, I think that that's a very good description of the show, and it really came out of a documentary that we did also for the History Channel several years ago called Holy Grail in America, which kind of started us down this path in terms of telling these types of stories.
So if we could, let's back up, and this is your opportunity for an absolute plug for your company, and let's talk about your background, how you started Committee Films, how you got it all going. Andy, you first.
Sure. Well, I started my career as a commercial director and editor, and I guess I didn't start there. I started at the bottom and worked my way up, but that was the first side of the industry that I was on. In Minneapolis here, we have a lot of really big brands and also a lot that are headquartered here and also a lot of really big ad agencies. So there's a lot of high-profile advertising work that goes on. And so I worked on that side of the business for several years, say 7 or 8 before we crossed over and started doing the television content. And Committee does still do commercial work, but now we do, as much or more of our work comes from television content. So that was my side of it. Maria can tell her side of it.
Yeah, my background is actually in broadcast journalism. So I was working for some of the local news affiliates here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And, I think for me, wanting to do more, tell even longer stories and be able to focus a little bit more on documentary type storytelling as opposed to, minute 30 news pieces, I think that was important to me. And I think I saw the opportunity to kind of capitalize what I wanted to do, and also weave it in with what Andy was already doing in terms of kind of the commercial aesthetic and the quality of production with commercials, and bringing that really to the cable television side. I think we were able to invent a really unique product that looked really great, that had some of the appeal and the bells and whistles of some of the big ads that people see on TV, but then now with actual documentary content, I think we were able to create really a fresh approach to how we tell stories, using sensibilities from both sides of the spectrum.
And it was, in my opinion, was sorely missing from cable TV. A lot of the reality shows sort of stripped that production value out of their work, I believe. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I got a real good look working with you guys on America Unearthed. in how you do it, but I want to get into more details on that later. Did you guys know that I actually worked with Tom McElligott briefly? Did I tell you that?
I think you might have mentioned that to me, but
I was at Chi A Day in Toronto, and he had gotten out of McElligott, Fallon McElligott, and joined Chi A Day as the creative director of Toronto, New York, and London. And London was too far, and he didn't like the New Yorkers because he's from Minnesota, probably. So he hung out in Toronto a lot, and I got to know him really well. And my first 2 weeks were spent in Minneapolis. Unfortunately, it was February, so I didn't see much of it except the tunnels. But a little sidebar there. Talk about a great storyteller. That guy was one of the world's great, is one of the world's great writers.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you guys are doing film and video for TV commercials, epic shows, and for web use, correct? Are you doing a lot that goes straight to web, or do you typically do broadcast? Is it primarily broadcast?
We do really everything. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on what it is that the client's looking for. I know, you know, recently we've done some projects with Target and some other brands that do go directly to the web. As far as content goes, kind of on the television side, you know, we're definitely looking to expand and get kind of into the streaming market and into all of those other ways that people are watching television now as that is changing. You know, I think that TV is going through a little bit of what the music industry went through a few years back, you know, in terms of how people are getting their content, how they want to watch it. It's changed a lot. And, you know, our interest is in just being good storytellers because there's always going to be a market for that. You know, there's always going to be a market for entertainment. And that's what we need to be focusing on.
Andy, from a filmic side, I'm just going to tell you, I absolutely love this Herman Miller commercial you guys have on your website. It's beautiful. It's fast-paced. You're using a two-camera technique for the interview. And the way you did that, a couple times you go from this fairly wide shot into an extremely tight shot on the guy's face. And I'm sure that's the result of shooting again and again and again, right? Like multiple takes. I think it was the CEO, Andy, right?
Did we lose Andy? I feel like he's not responding.
Wait, there he is.
Hello?
Andy.
There he is.
Yeah, it dropped out for a second.
That's weird.
Yes, you know, actually, it's been a while since I did that, and I cannot remember his title. He might have been the chief technology officer, or chief operating officer, I think.
COO, I think, yeah.
I think he was the COO. But, with an interview like that, it wasn't a lot of takes, you know. I mean, it really depends on the person you're interviewing. That gentleman in particular was a great interview. And we always like to shoot our interviews with two cameras, partially because it gives you an option to cut away to when you're editing it, other than always having to cut to a B-roll shot. But then also, you know, for some of those more intense answers or more intense statements or emotional, if that happens to be the subject matter, being able to go to that other angle and get really tight on someone's face or their eyes, it really just helps. It helps with the storytelling. You know, it's all, it's not just about what they're saying, it's about how they look when they're saying it and what is the camera doing. So we, no matter what we're doing, we try to bring a cinematic style to the final product, no matter what it is. And some, you know, and this nothing against, you know, some shows don't. On a reality show where you're following people around and you're capturing exactly what's happening as it's happening and you can't go back and get another take, you really just got to get whatever you can get. I mean, you're doing a show like Deadliest Catch where the action is happening and there's nothing you can do that's going to stop it. You just got to get it, you know. So there's definitely something to be said for that style. We haven't to date really done anything that falls into that category. If we did, I think we would approach it much the same way that they do. But for now, the kinds of projects we're working on, we've really tried to instill that cinematic look and feel to the piece.
And it's coming through in a lot of what you're doing, in particular, the America Unearthed series and the show before that you mentioned, Andy, Holy Grail in America. And I witnessed the shooting of some of the America Unearthed because I was a guest on it. I don't like to tell too many people that.
You were a great guest, Steve.
But it was fun. It was a hell of a lot of fun, I have to say. But I learned, I got to tell you, I learned so much watching you guys work the way you work, watching your DPs work, watching how you direct Andy, and how you press to get so much film shot. And that's a point I want to make to the content marketers out there in the world, is that there's a level of craft that you guys are bringing to this that I think can be easily left out by too many companies. They forget that the craft can separate your company from other companies. It can tell your story better. And I saw how you put together those scenes. I mean, we drove around in cars shooting. There were three cameras in the car. There was a lead vehicle. I think there was a chase vehicle at one point, just to shoot Scott Walter and I in the car a couple times. I mean, can you touch on that? I'm curious. I don't know if you have a measure, but like one episode, how many megs is that? How many terabytes are you shooting of footage? They used to say feet of film, right? I'm sure it's terabytes now.
Right. Wow, I should know that. That's a good question. I would say on America Unearthed, we'd shoot that show, each episode, in about 5 to 6 days, and we would probably shoot about 1.5 terabytes of media, and it all depends on what kind of cameras you're shooting, how the compression works on that particular camera, and now as cameras are getting more and more are moving towards 4K, so you got that much more data. But yeah, I mean the shooting ratio is pretty high. You're shooting a lot. We may shoot you and Scott standing there having a conversation, and we shoot you guys for an hour and a half, and it ends up being, maybe like 5 minutes of the show, And that's I think, typical of a lot of shows of this style. But as far as the craft and everything like that, I mean, that for us, we didn't want to do it if it wasn't going to look good, and we really wanted to bring – because working on the higher end commercials that we've done a lot of, whether they're for broadcast or for the web, we've tried to have a really high end aesthetic, and a lot of times the client really wants that, and that's why they hire us. And we wanted to bring that to the television side of things. So America Unearthed is shot. It's not shot like a reality show. It's shot like a movie. I mean, we shoot it so you're not feeling the presence of the cameraman. You feel like you're watching a scene in a movie. And granted, in a movie, people aren't standing around having these long conversations about things, but they're not trying to convey information the same way we are. So while it is a documentary, it's shot much the same style that you would shoot a narrative film.
Right. One thing I would just add too, I mean, especially in the day and age where everybody can shoot video on all different kinds of devices, right? I mean, anyone can be a documentarian and be a filmmaker, and I certainly applaud everyone's efforts, and I think Andy would too. I mean, I think there's just a whole different level of engagement that takes place for people now in terms of things like that. But I think that it's important to also think about, yes, everybody has the ability to create content that way, but not necessarily content that looks like this, right? I mean, I think there's a very clear distinction in, the production quality and what we as filmmakers really bring to the table, whether it's for commercial projects or for television content.
I think it makes a tremendous difference, Maria. I think that's a great point. And I think that companies out there doing content marketing videos for their websites and for other promotion need to separate this into what we call a three-tier approach, which is you can't expect – I'd love it if they would. I'm sure Coca-Cola and some big car companies can afford to do that maybe, shoot all their stuff with guys like you guys. But I wish you that. However, I think a more practical approach for midsize and small companies is to maybe do one a year. Two a year that are epic. And it's not just the production value we're talking about. It's the story. It's the conceptual idea that you're conveying that differentiates you. But then very often I see that getting sacrificed in the production. I won't name names, but we bid on a project that was going to go pretty – it was going to be pretty cool. But the production, I looked at it after they produced it with another company. I'm like, oh, it's really sad. It's cheap-looking animation and stuff. And it really hurts – the end result. The story was still interesting, but you can easily destroy the story, especially if it involves filming people and you're looking for an earnest reaction or a funny joke, and you don't get it. And I think that's the part of filmmaking that companies like you guys exist for, Andy. I know you know how to get that from people. And part of it is shooting multiple takes. But it's really, you have a flexibility in the way you approach every project, right?
Yes, definitely. You
so,
have to.
I mean, if you guys have some very funny spots. Can you talk about some of those? Or some? There was a series that you were talking about at 1.2. I don't know how much you can tell me that has not yet been produced. But let's talk humor for a second, for instance. How do you get humor? How do you direct humor, Andy?
Well, I think, I mean, especially, you know, when it comes to a commercial, I mean, you need to have a funny script, a funny premise to start with, but then you need great actors. And one thing in Minneapolis, I think we've got a lot of great comedic actors. There's a lot of improv that goes on here, and I think that just helps kind of generates, not the right word, but we end up with a lot of actors that have skill sets on the comedic side. So starting with great actors is the key, and then I feel like you've got a good comedian, someone who's just really funny in their own right. You give them the general premise, but you let them just riff, just let them try, you know, their own lines, their own ideas, and you'll often end up with better stuff than you would ever write. We did a spot for Best Buy for a video game, and the guy, the whole entire spot is this guy like talking right to the camera. He's talking to a Best Buy employee, but he's just looking right into the camera, just delivering lines. And we could have probably done 20 different spots with the different stuff this guy came up with. He just kept coming up with them, and we were having trouble, you know, getting a steady shot because we were all laughing so hard. He was so funny. So I think that's really where that comes from.
I think that it's actually important just to keep that in mind for everything. I mean, you really, you know, you want to really pay attention to what somebody's doing. Like if it's comedy, that's one thing, and letting them go kind of outside the box and thinking outside the box and letting them riff. I think the same thing can apply to other interviews, you know, whether it's for television or for commercials or whatever, where if you have somebody who's passionate about something, it's more interesting to hear them say it in their own way, you know, or to talk about things in a way that seems natural, as opposed to always be feeding very specific lines to people to say.
Right. So we're talking a lot about film quality, but there's a lot more to it than that, isn't there? There's sound quality, for instance, editing. I noticed you guys shoot a ton of B-roll footage. And there's even more, the production setup, it's getting the locations. There's a lot that goes into this, right, Maria?
Oh, yes. There's a lot that goes into it, yeah. I mean, all the pieces really do have to come together. I mean, I guess if you think of it sort of like an orchestra, you know, it might sound good if you have one good instrument, but it sounds even better when everybody's playing on key. You know, it's very important to have all those different roles come together at just the right time. And that's everything from on the very front end involving researchers and things like that to the actual execution with, as you mentioned, you know, sound, cameras, all of that, directing, everything.
And it's everything down to the, I mean, because the you know, when you look at the credits or something, you know, you'll see the producers, the writer, the director, but there's so many people beyond that, the people who are doing the research, the people who are getting the permits, the people who are lining up and scheduling everything, the people who are coordinating all the travel, all of that on the production side of it are sort of the unsung heroes that you know, we'd never be able to shoot anything if they didn't do their job as well as they did. And then on the back end, I mean, it's editors, I think, get attention, but it's the assistant editors, it's the sound designer, it's the guy doing the mix, it's the guy doing the color correction, it's the people doing the graphics, and the composer writing the music. All of those things coming together and having the best people to do all those things, which I believe we do, whether they work here or we hire them as freelancers or subcontractors, we really want great people who want to do good work. And that may sound like, well, of course you do, but I don't know that everyone really approaches it that way.
I think when I watch what you guys do, whether it's commercials or some of the films you've done and some of the series, it definitely shows. I mean, the graphics, animations, the titles, the pacing, the music, the audio quality is tremendous. I see so many videos that blow that, so many shows that blow that, where they clearly don't have the right equipment, literally, to record people's voices and get the most out of it. So much goes into this. Let's go into a couple more details here. Let's talk specifically audio quality, because I've become hyper aware of that when I listen to movies or watch people's, especially in the corporate world. There are companies that are just fine pointing an iPhone at someone. Very often they forget to turn it sideways, which cracks me up, and recording using the built-in mic. And they might be recording someone important and not really understanding that this person's delivering a real serious thought leadership. And with the investment of just $1,000, you know, they could get something better than this. How do you guys handle the whole audio experience of a film or a commercial? I know that's a big question.
I mean, I think it's about the right equipment for sure, but it's also about the right person being your audio mixer who is setting up and handling that equipment. But you're right, audio is the most important thing in a show like this, because you can get all the pretty pictures you want, but if you can't hear what the person's saying, who cares? You know,
right.
you can do voiceover, and depending on what you're doing, sometimes voiceover is a necessity and a valuable tool, but it's not all going to be voiceover. And if you have bad quality audio, you're lost. You have to go back and reshoot. If your video isn't that great, but you've got good audio, there are ways around that. You can cut away to something. You can show the other angle. You know, whatever. But audio is key. So it's all about having the right equipment, and then also having somebody who knows how to operate that equipment, because it's not. You know, you can get some. You can definitely get some prosumer equipment that most people can figure out how to use and do a pretty good job. But if you really want to kind of do things to the next level, I guess to be cliche, you need a good audio mixer who really knows his or her stuff.
That was a good pun, to the next level. I like that.
We're just full of them here.
I tell you, I remember standing outside, I think it was somewhere in France when we were there doing that episode. And I've worked with good audio guys before, but the guy that was with us at that point, I think it was Jim, right?
Probably,
yep. Jim Morgan.
I think so, yeah. And I'm standing there, and, you know, we're all focused on what's happening in our group, and your guys, your DPs are focused on us, and he's sitting there by himself listening to the entire thing. No one else noticed there's a jet going over at 35,000 feet above, and it's messing up the audio. And I'll see you look at him because you've heard it, or he'll notify you that, okay, we got to do another take. And it's those little things. I'm just so impressed by the level of production that goes into this. And that's my message today with this, is it's important to have all that in play. And that's why this costs more money, right?
Yeah, I think
definitely.
What's interesting, and for me what's interesting about the sound, just in talking about Jim, I can remember a particular incident working with him where, you know, he was just insistent that there's this hum and this thing, and, you know, I couldn't hear it, and that's what he's there for. But the search for what's causing the hum, you know, is always interesting. Is it the coffee maker? Is it the refrigerator? You know, let's unplug that, let's do this. And I think people don't realize that a lot of that does that goes on, you know, behind the scenes, because
right.
they're that committed to their craft, and thank goodness that they are, because then the product sounds amazing. So
let's talk about one other element, the editing, the actual pace and how you control the pace. Is that kind of determined in advance? I mean, you knew with American Earth you wanted to build suspense and you wanted to lead to a climactic conclusion, right? How early do you figure out the pacing of an edit?
Well, you never, I mean, you figure it out when you're kind of starting to put the thing together. So in the edit process, you figure it out pretty early on, but you know, a lot of times you'll string something out and you're stringing it out. So you're so that you know, okay, we have all the right content in here. We're saying we're getting the right bites in. We're not missing anything. This is everything we need to have in here. And then you start to work. So I guess I take that back. It is a little bit later into the process of editing. It's more when you get into the finesse stage, you start to think about the pacing. And different storytelling has different pacing. If it's action, it's going to be really fast-paced, quick cuts. If you're trying to draw things out and to create suspense, it's holding takes for longer. It's longer shots in conjunction with what the music is doing or what the sound effects might doing. If you're doing comedy, you were talking about comedy earlier, it's all about the editing and the pacing and how long, you know, holding on that guy's face just another second makes it 10 times funnier than if you'd cut out a second before. And it's not really anything that you can, you know, there's no equation to figure out how long you need to hold on a shot or how quickly you should cut. It really is about feel, and a good editor can just feel it. They can just feel what a story requires to get the most out of it.
That's great. Well said. Maria, from a production point of view, how big is your team? Like, for instance, on American Earth, how many? I've talked to a few, but I know
huge
team.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, it takes a lot of people to put that show together. You know, I think on the production side, if you think about it, say there's 13 episodes in a season, which was our regular season order for that show. We have probably three writer producers working on individual episodes, sometimes four. It just depends on how the episodes are stacked up and what order they're going in. But that person is then responsible for the research, for setting up all the shoots, for doing the writing. And that's a little bit different maybe than some other production companies may do it. Some have people who are strictly producers in that role that's a little bit more on the logistics side and set up. And then there's a separate writer who comes in. It's worked really well for us to have the continuity that's there from the very beginning to end in terms of following through not just with research on the story, but then all the way through the end result of the various scripts. So, you know, there's those folks working on that. There's a production manager. There's, you know, countless other people who really go into the production side of it, whether it's with the graphics and then the editing. You know, and I would oversee, you know, the writing as a series producer on that show. And then Andy more so on the creative side. So there's a lot of folks there just in production and then in post-production, which is what happens next, you know, before it gets on television, there's a whole battery of other folks there, you know, if there's special effects that need to be done to the recreations and things like that who are involved. So I don't know, Andy, if you had to say a number of people involved in each episode, I'm not sure. What would you say total?
Well, in the field, we have our crew is usually six or seven people, and it depends on where we're going and how much content we're trying to shoot.
Right.
But there's six or seven people. Then, you know, in the office on the writing and the editing side and then through post-production, I'd say there's another 20 people that touch every single episode. Yeah.
Wow. That's huge.
Yeah. It is. But I think, you know, what's great about a show like America on Earth and one that has run for so long is that you really develop, you know, a great process for how it works and people knowing each other's strengths and, you know, really being able to hone in on the finer points of the story because now you know what everybody's role is and everyone is so good at those things. So it runs very much like a machine, which is a good thing in that sense, but it also allows us the ability to really dive into pieces of content that need a little bit more attention or are a little more exploratory or something like that.
One thing I noticed, and I don't know how much of this you can talk about, but when we were in Portugal, let me back up. I think one thing that helps you guys tremendously is your ability to roll with the punches. And I've never seen any production company get walloped like you guys did in Portugal. You know, you thought you were shooting in one place. You couldn't for various reasons. And what happened as a result of that was really magic. And, Maria, you know what I'm talking about because I'm sure you were yelling in the background at certain people.
Yeah, I mean, you can plan and plan and plan and plan, and everything can seem like it's in place. And, you know, but when we're filming, and we're filming around the world frequently, things actually do get lost in translation, or there's, you know, there's problems that arise, and you really do need to be able to roll with the punches, because we're in Portugal, and in the particular episode you're talking about, you know, we thought that this had a, you know, maybe a season finale or something like that, and this was like the last scene, and now something's happened and we can't shoot it at this particular site. So what are we going to do? Well, we can't just throw our arms up in the air and be like, well, oh, well, we can't get in. I mean, there has to be an end. There has to be an end to the program. So what are we going to do? So it really is then very boots on the ground in terms of what else can we do? And that's where it's really important, you know, how well do you know the content? What are all the other things we can do? I mean, in this particular circumstance, it involved seeking out the local priest to come help us make inroads to try to find a way to shoot at a different location. In this instance, it was a church. But you very much have to roll with the punches and think of other alternatives. I mean, that's kind of the exciting thing, I think, about creating content in any vein, is really it's all up to you, you know, and you have to be able to roll with the punches. You have to be able to think outside the box. You want to make the best story that is there, but there are also all different kinds of ways to tell a story. So just because we didn't get the ending that we went there to get or thinking we were going to get, we ended up getting what I think was a better ending overall anyway. You know, but it was very stressful at the time, and yes, there was some yelling going on. But yeah, you have to be able to adapt to everything that's thrown your way, and I think anyone in television production or commercial production would say that that's for sure the case. So,
yeah, you guys handled that one really well.
At least
made
in
a great
front of the camera.
For now.
It did,
again,
it
I'm
did.
Sorry.
I said, yeah. We handled it really well for all that you knew about it. No, I'm just kidding. It was, it was. We did, I think we really came together, and it was really, everybody who's on the crew and who'd been on the crew with us for a long time, I mean, you want to chip in, you want to make it work. Everybody has, it's in everyone's best interest to work together and figure it out. And it's exciting when you do, when you can, and you come up with something that's even better than you thought you were going to have in the first place. So.
Well, one final question. You guys are on the front lines of high-end film production. You are seeing it both from a commercial end and an entertainment end. I would call that probably the wrong phrase, but a cable TV side. And what are you seeing? What mega trends are you seeing? Obviously, there's a push more and more to the web. There's now more viewer control of when and where they watch, thanks to Netflix and things like that. Which means fewer commercials. I mean, are more production companies like you guys diversifying into cable shows and trying to protect themselves that way? What's happening mega in your business?
You know, I would say, and I guess I can't say for sure, because I know what we do and I know the production companies I know of, but I'm sure other people out there are diversifying the way we are, but I don't think a lot are. I think a lot are staying pretty, you know, the TV production companies are producing TV, and the commercial, corporate, advertising production companies are doing that. And, you know, there's not necessarily anything wrong with one or the other, but they are very different worlds in the way they work, in the kinds of clients that are going to be hiring you to do those things. For us, we always felt like it was a natural, you know, marriage between the two, and it's really proven to be successful for us, because we've had television networks that were interested in us because of the commercial aesthetic that we could bring to a project, and we've had commercial clients who are interested in us because of the longer form content and storytelling that we have done so much of now. So for us, it's really been kind of the best of both worlds. I don't know that things seem to be, I think several years ago there was this big push to the web, and now that people are so savvy about that and savvy about marketing on the web and all of the different avenues for it, and taking advantage of that, I think you are going to see more of that, but I don't think you're going to see commercials going away either. And it may not be television commercials the way they are now, where you're watching a show and, you know, there's a commercial break and you watch 3 or 4 minutes of commercials and now you're back to the show. But something still has to pay for that content to be on the air,
right?
Whether you're watching it on on live television, whether you're watching it on demand, whether you're watching it on Netflix, whether you're watching it on YouTube, something somewhere has to pay for that. And so you're going to see things like now where you watch shows on demand and they force you to watch. It's only one commercial, but they force you to watch that commercial between, you know, when you have that normal commercial break that you may now fast forward on your DVR.
Right. Pandora
yeah.
is a good example. It's a radio
yeah.
station, basically, but they force you to listen to ads. There's no other
yep.
way for them to keep it alive.
Right.
You know. And my theory on all things web is eventually they must go, if they want to monetize, they must go to some form of an advertising model. And that keeps you and me and Committee Films and I on Leap Fed, which is a good thing.
Yes, exactly.
yes.
well, guys, thank you for this. I want to direct the listening audience to committeefilms.com, where they'll see your website and a ton of different samples, both from the cable world and your feature films and stuff like that. And I think I'm accurate in saying that, right? But definitely the commercials
yeah.
as well. What is the right
yep.
phrase? Cable or?
Television.
Television,
we do,
yep.
I mean, network and cable. So just television.
Right, right.
We just call it television.
Okay. I'll call it storytelling. I like that better.
There you go.
storytelling.
You guys are great
good.
At it.
Yes. Yes.
Guys, thanks a lot, Marie and Andy. This is always fun. I love yeah. hanging out with you guys, even if it's just on the air. But in France, it's better hanging out with you in France. So let's do that
it
again,
It was a
too.
Good time.
We
All
should
right.
do that
well,
again
thank you.
Soon.
Thank you so much for having us. We love doing this kind of a thing. So.
And that URL, again, is committeefilms.com. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Ion Leap podcast.